Welcome into episode 2 of the Draft Good Players podcast. Now, hold on. I know you're not hearing the dulcet tones of Ray Garvin. You're not seeing or hearing Keith Sanchez. Don't worry. They will be back every Wednesday. They are your Wednesday hosts of this podcast, but I'll be coming to you weekly as well. I know I'm disappointing everybody, but I'll be here weekly as well on Mondays with different guests. But the theme remains the same for this show. We're taking a different approach to fantasy football analysis. This is not going to be start sit. This is not going to be who you should pick up on waiver wires. This is going to be looking deeper into some of the football reasons why you should or should not target players in your dynasty league, even redraft leagues, devy leagues, or maybe give you some names of some players that you kind of should be watching a little bit more. And we've got a special one here today on this show because I have brought on founder of the Draft Network, director of scouting, Dolphins expert,
let's grinder. Oh, Jamie Eisner, let's
grinder
go.
Of tape, Kyle Krabs, who's very, very excited now because we're going to talk about a couple of Dolphins wide receivers here, and who better than Kyle to talk to? We're going to talk about Jaylen Waddle. We're going to talk about Tyreek Hill, and we're going to talk about them from a long-term standpoint because Jaylen Waddle had a phenomenal rookie season. Tyreek Hill has been sensational for years now, but now they're together. They've got a new head coach for both of them, and things are going to change a little bit here. So, Kyle, let's start with this. Let's start with Jaylen Waddle. He's the hot name going into his second season, set the rookie receptions record in year one. Let's just set the table here for everybody. Where did Jaylen Waddle excel at Alabama, and what did he do well as a rookie to kind of get that record his own?
Hold on. First of all, we're on the Draft Good Players podcast.
We are.
Right? So let's turn the intensity up here a little bit.
Okay.
Huh? This is, of course, you brought me on to talk about the Dolphins, naturally. But this concept is really cool. And as you already acknowledged, we don't have Keith Sanchez's million-dollar smile on here. Or Ray's. Ray has the best cadence of any, like, when he does, like, solo videos and stuff. His ability to immediately rope you into what he's going to talk about is a gift. So
it is.
I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself to live up to the standards of episode one of Draft Good Players. So I'm on like my fourth energy drink of the day, and we're gonna do the best to get like hyped up, Kyle, because that has traditionally been the most entertaining version of me that I can give you. So your question, Jaylen Waddle, Alabama, where he won, and then how that foiled to how he was used last year.
Yep.
Make sure I got the notes right.
Let's set the base here. Let's set the base of who he is as a player, what he did well in college, what translated in year one. And then we'll start to get later in the episode into the nuances of how he grows, how he fits in the Mike McDaniel offense, how he fits around Tyreek Hill. But let's set the base right now.
Yeah, the base is Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle is a... not necessarily has not historically at Alabama been a volume receiver, right? He played in this very crowded wide receiver room with all of this talent at your disposal. And he was a little bit more of like what the Henry Ruggs usage at Alabama was like until his final season. And through the first four games of that 2020 campaign before he suffered the ankle injury against Tennessee on the opening kickoff, and we didn't see him again until the national championship game, Jaylen Waddle was outproducing Devontae Smith, who would then go on to win the Heisman because Alabama took everything that Jaylen Waddle did, and they just said, okay, Devontae, you're going to do this now too, on top of everything else that you already have on your plate. So he was a player who excelled in space, excelled in deep over routes across the middle, deep targets vertically down the field, and quick throws in the short areas of the field that allowed him to create yardage after the catch, in addition to a very electric special teams player as a return man, as I got to see firsthand when we were in Tuscaloosa for Joe Burrow Tua Tagovailoa from the 2019 college football season. So he was a player that won in all three levels of the field. He just wasn't necessarily targeted with the kind of frequency that suggests that this was an every all-encompassing kind of player. And then you got to see the flashes of that, and then unfortunately, courtesy of special teams, we did not see him through two-thirds of his final season at Alabama.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously they're different players, but we saw a very similar career arc with a guy like Jameson Williams, who didn't have a ton of production for a while until his last year, explodes. Now, he suffered injury much later in the year, and obviously there's high expectations for him going to Detroit. But, you know, Waddle last year, and I know this is – I'm going to bring this up because I know it gets you fired up, because I think this is where – we're trying to educate a little bit. And obviously, if you're listening to a show like this, you're already at a higher level of football knowledge and maybe the average fantasy football player. And there's nothing wrong with that. We're trying to kind of bring everybody up here. You heard the phrase a lot after his 104 catches that what was the tweet you saw that Jalen Waddle was a quote unquote possession receiver? Let's talk about how, like, the difference between usage and what it shows in the box score. Just because you're a volume guy doesn't mean that you're a quote unquote possession receiver.
Yeah. Miami had a head coach that did not trust the quarterback to make extended reads or hold the ball or play within the pocket. Miami had an abysmal offensive line. Miami was on bare bones from offensive assistance at this standpoint. Brian Flores, in the first 2 years of the job in Miami, had exhausted all of his connections that existed throughout his time in the NFL, because he was exclusively in the New England Patriots bubble, right? And then you leave that bubble and people are either playing with Bill Belichick himself or they're playing with Nick Saban because they failed as head coaches and go back down to the college levels and rebuild their image. Or they're also head coaches somewhere else simultaneously. And, oh, by the way, you had this total backlog for a decade on the offensive side of the ball in New England's coaching tree because it was Josh McDaniels the entire time. So we brought in Charlie Fry with 2 years of college offensive play calling experience and one additional year of coaching experience at the college level at all. And then you had co-offensive coordinators with a couple of longtime position coaches. So they didn't really have structure in the run game to win in the run game. Their pass protection featured a highly inexperienced Coach Lem was playing just a couple years ago, and he's the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
And they went through four offensive line coaches in three seasons. So the structure, the infrastructure of everything you were doing offensively was a hot mess. And the Band-Aid became get Jalen the ball quickly and let him make stuff happen. And what you saw was it kind of like the A dot way down, right? To the point where we're throwing smoke throws inside our own goal line on first and 10 at the 1 yard line against the Raiders in a game that you're up 14 points and you get a safety because Jacoby Brissett airmails it out there. And it was just, we want to get Jalen the ball and let something happen, right? So there's all these extenuating circumstances that exist around what Miami's offense looked like that was not necessarily a true reflection. But Jamie, I'll say this, the biggest conflict between what Jalen Waddle did well and what the Dolphins asked him to do last year is you had a tight end whose best route was the exact same route that was Jalen Waddle's best route. And it's that deep over route across the middle. When you go play action or you're looking for somebody who's lined up in the slot to carry across both sets of the hashes and use your speed, Jalen Waddle killed on that route all throughout his time in college. It's one of the staple plays that Alabama had, where you'd run a vertical or a post, cross underneath, some kind of play fake with the ball in the backfield, and leak that player out into the flat. And then you'd had all of these different variations to get to that three-level stretch. Well, Jalen's not doing that if that's Mike Gesicki's best route. Right. And that was the biggest backlog where I'm watching. It's like, man, you'd really love to have Jalen, who's this dynamic player, lined up or two or three strong and running this deep over out across the middle of the field. And I think that's where this offensive structural change gets very interesting as you look moving forward. But just to keep it on Jalen Waddle, it was out of necessity for a lot of different reasons beyond what Jalen Waddle was or was not physically capable of doing.
So on that note, let's talk about this, because look, at the end of the day, fantasy football is a stats-based industry. It's stats-based. That's how you win. That's how you lose. It's how you accumulate whatever it is. So if you were in a PPR, half PPR league, and you took Jalen Waddle, whether it was in a redraft or as one of your higher picks in the first round of your rookie draft,
you're
pretty happy with that. You're still pretty happy, by the way. Yeah. But I think this year, you know, I do these projections and I try to go and I look at target shares, how often I think an offense throws and all of this. From what, hearing you talk, what I'm hearing is that expect fewer receptions, expect more production per catch. Is that a reasonable assumption to make this year with Jaylen Watt?
Absolutely. And the other reason why I think that, beyond Tyreek Hill's addition as well, and a team that's going to run the ball much more and much more effectively this year, the other reason why I think that is very much prevalent is Miami had a terrible time spacing the field last year. And some of that, if you want to get into, well, teams don't respect Tua Tagovailoa's arm and all that stuff, yeah, sure, you can have that argument all you want. But when teams are playing too high shell and you still can't run the ball, they're going to sit at 12 yards of depth and they're going to say, go ahead. We know you can't run the ball even when we're in two high shells. So we're going to dictate you to try to run the ball and get you into third and longs. We know you can't pass protect for any amount of extended period of time. So we're just going to sit and crowd the field. So having the ability, and Wes Welker, when I was down at Miami Dolphins training camp, he talked about this a little bit. He was asked about the pros and cons of having Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle on the same side of the formation versus opposing sides of the formation. And he talked a lot about how you can easily or conceptually manipulate coverage shells to automatically go to a too high look if they're on other sides of the field. But then if you put them on the same side of the formation, you know you're probably going to get some kind of cloud corner and then a deep third or half player underneath of that. So it gives you more ways to have the tell of what the defense is going to do to defend you. Where last year, it didn't really matter what you tried to do offensively with your structure. Defense says, we know what you are physically capable of doing and what you're not. So we're going to play the same because you can't dictate terms to us. And I think that is a big change as well, with addition to all this speed, not just Tyreek Hill too, the speed in the backfield, the wide zones, like they're all pieces of the puzzle that fit together. And for the spacing component, I think you'll see more run after catch for Jaylen Waddle, because it won't be, I have to catch the ball, square a guy up, make him miss, and then try to find space when everything's crowded inside of 12 to 15 yards.
Yeah, and that's why this was so fascinating and why I wanted this to be the first topic that I tackled and have you on here. Because, you know, look, it's been two off seasons ago was the unprecedented quarterback off season. This off season was the unprecedented wide receiver movement off season. But it's such a fascinating scenario because so much has changed. And let's get into Tyreek Hill. You know, we kind of weren't ready for this. We were hearing about all these other receivers that were having issues. And then kind of out of nowhere went like, Tyreek Hill and Kansas City broke down. And like 48 hours later, he's a Miami Dolphin. It was this very quick, rapid movement when this happened. Rarely do you get to see a talent like Tyreek Hill, not just from a overall production standpoint, but from just a unique skill set standpoint. Like there aren't other Tyreek Hills in the NFL. There are other great receivers, but there aren't other Tyreek Hills. And I look at the way this Dolphins offense looked last year, and we talked about Waddle being a target hog. 23.8% in the 16 active games last year that Waddle played. That was his target share. I'm of the mind, and I think you kind of alluded to it, that with their ability to run the ball more effectively with Mike McDaniel's offense, which we'll get into a little bit more later, this is not going to be a 40 pass attempt a game type of offense unless something goes horribly, horribly wrong. So how can these two guys coexist? Like, let's start with just the immediate thought of Tyreek Hill's impact on the workload that Jaylen Waddle can get, and the positives and the negatives that might come from a statistical standpoint because of this move.
Yeah, I think you will undoubtedly see a marginal decrease for both players when it's all said and done. I think that's probably just the law of averages of teams are going to decide who they want to take away on any given week. And that's going to depend on who their top corner is. If they feel their top corner has the ability to lock up with Tyreek Hill and go mano-a-mano with him, and then you can shade the safety and roll the rest of the coverage towards Jaylen Waddle. Or maybe you don't feel that way, so you need to play over top of Tyreek Hill, and then you're going to really hope that Jaylen... So like, there's going to be give and take on any given week with the matchups. So I think you'll see a marginal decrease in both. But I think there's other places in this Dolphins offense where you will see greater reductions, and the point being with the investments that have been made in both of these two players, number six overall pick in Jaylen Waddle, and obviously the much discussed and debated decision to trade back up from 12 after moving down from 3 with San Francisco so they could go get Trey Lance and then manufacturing another trade with Philadelphia. That's a high investment in a wide receiver. And Jalen Waddle proved it to be a wise investment with the pre-existing chemistry that he had with Tua Tagovailoa and how dynamic he is as a football player. And then obviously you're paying Tyreek Hill $30 million. You didn't bring Tyreek Hill in and trade a 1 and a 2 and a bunch of extra day 3 picks and give him a contract worth $30 million per season to not give him the kind of workload that he has traditionally been working with. So I think those two players being hallmarks and staples, unless there's injury dynamics that show up in which you might not have one of them for any period of time, I think you're going to see the conscious effort to put those players in positions to run the money routes and to run your money concepts and really make sure that they are the ones who are the hallmark featured pieces in the passing game. So I think it's more the peripheral players, the other threats that you have, whether that is Mike Gesicki or the backs out of the backfield, although Chase Edmonds got 2 years, $12 million, so he got a pretty reasonable commitment from the Dolphins, or they signed Cedric Wilson in free agency to come in, and he was a very successful 4 and then became a 3 as the injury dynamics happened with Dallas last year. I think all of those guys will pretty have a pretty standard flat rate where as you work through the progressions, you'll happen to find those guys intermittently. But Tyreek and Jalen are going to play off each other with almost everything you do in the passing game. And it's just going to be who decides to try to take what away.
Yeah, and if you remember if you take everybody back here a couple months where I ended up doing my projections, and I think I messaged you and I said, I don't know where the targets are coming from for Mike Gesicki. And I know flash forward to you were down at Miami Dolphins camp for a full week. And I think the first thing you said to me when you got back was, I don't know where you have Mike Gesicki, but too high. And, you know, this is not the Mike Gesicki show, but like, I think this illustrates because I think the initial reaction, I think one of two things tends to happen. Either everybody just assumes that everybody's going to put up the exact same numbers they did before just with their new team. I think that's an unrealistic expectation. They might be similar, but there are differences significant between volume and operation of the Kansas City offense and what we expect in Miami. But I also don't think it's like, oh no, now they're going to have each other's workload either. Because the reality is, like you said, the investment both in draft capital, actual capital into both of these guys is massive. And we've seen them both have a lot of success. And I think you dropped about, I don't know, 12 tweets of them from Bucks joint practices where they were cooking corners one-on-one. Like,
correct.
They're going to be a problem because you can't double them both. And if you try to double them both and you play in those two deep shells, this team's going to have a commitment to running the football that we hadn't seen in a while. So it's a very intriguing option for me. But let's talk about the overarching theme so far that we talked about. And that's Mike McDaniel's offense. And from just a pure volume standpoint, I want to start with this, and then I want you to kind of break out the nuances of it because nobody has studied this more in this offseason than you have. From a pure volume standpoint, which I will continue to beat the drum on, you always have to pay attention to offensive volume as much as talent in fantasy because you need opportunity plus talent to reach that full potential. You know, the Dolphins were averaging over the last couple seasons a little over 35.5 pass attempts per game. In the 20 games last year with McDaniel as a coordinator for the Niners, it was under 30. It was down to 29.4. Now, it's not as easy just to say, oh, okay, well, they're just now going to throw 10 less times a game. It's not that simple. But I want to kind of get your thoughts on this of how this offense over as a whole balances. Because if you look at the Chiefs offense for for Tyreek Hill as well, that's a team that averaged 39.8 pass attempts per game in the last two seasons. So both of these receivers are probably going to see a volume reduction just in terms of total passing offense. But what do you kind of see at them fitting in overall for this offense, and how can they be successful with what Mike McDaniel likes to do?
Yeah, I think you look at two of the last 3 years, San Francisco has had 498 and 499 rush attempts in two of the last 3 years. So, and those were their two most successful seasons. That was the year they went to the Super Bowl. And then that was the year that they went to the NFC Championship game this past year. So that dynamic of what they are committed to doing, and you think about the concept of running the football in general, and it's all about staying on schedule, right? And there's kind of this game theory that a lot of coaches have as far as wanting to get into third and shorts because it gives you the entirety of your playbook. That's the objective of the game of football, yep, offensively, right? Is you want to win on third down, you want to win in the red zone, you want to win the turnover battle, like all that jazz. But how do you do that? And the school of thought here is if we run wide zone and we attack defenses where they are not, which is effectively, Coach McDaniel has used that phrase a couple of times, and that can be applied to whether deciding to pass or run or when running the football, and the running back going through his reads on the track and committing to making his cut based off where defensive pursuit is and is not. You can get into those third and shorts of third and three and less, and that forces teams to play you much more modestly, where the Dolphins – the past couple of years have been a team that has been passed to set up the run as far as what, how they have chosen to attack. And it hasn't bore fruit. Well, everybody knows the reputation that the Shanahan systems do for their ability to string out the point of attack and have versatile offensive linemen. And what's really cool is seeing each one of the subsections of the Shanahan tree, whether it's McVay with the Rams or LaFleur with Green Bay or Kyle himself now in San Francisco, they all have kind of put like their own unique tweaks and spin on wide zone systems, right? Where Shanahan now has a dynamic running quarterback in Trey Lance, who won a lot at North Dakota State with not only zone read, but QB power, like a lot of the things that Cam Newton historically has done. So now you have the speed to the outside, but now you also have this hammer that can come up and hit you in the middle. And you think about the Rams, and they've transitioned to a little bit more inside zone, but they're still very condensed formations. They like to throw out of condensed formations. They like still like the motion. Well, McDaniel, the expectation based on the strengths and weaknesses of Tua Tagovailoa is you're going to take a lot of what he was really proficient at last year, and the Dolphins leaned way too hard into because it was the only thing that they found they had any success with, which was the RPO game. And now you're going to build your play action passing in your RPO game off of the wide zone. But at the end of the day, you are going to run the football because, and this was a really cool way that this was vocalized. And it was a college clinic that I was watching, and they were talking about the wide zone in general. And it was University of Iowa. They were talking about, conceptually, when you run wide zone, if we block it perfect and you block and you defend it perfectly, our expectation is we are still going to get 4 yards on the play. So you take that wide zone concept at the college level, but at Iowa, a very respectable program that has had a lot of success with offensive linemen and running the football, because Lord knows they certainly can't pass the football over there in Iowa City. And if you bring that mentality, I'm not a math guy, but 4 plus 4 is 8. You get 10 yards for first down. That's going to consistently put you in that third and two. And then if you stuff the box, again, you can trigger on that apex defender and tag routes on the back end of it, which is what was what Steve Sarkisian did so well at Alabama with Tua Tagovailoa his final year there. So it's cool to see like all the puzzle pieces fit together, and you're kind of filling in the blanks and transplanting core concepts from San Francisco. You're transplanting core concepts from Alabama. You're transplanting these core concepts that Miami had success with last year. And you can kind of see how they overlap. And then that in turn is going to give yet another Shanahan tree coach this unique spin and flavor on running a wide zone system.
And it's an interesting stable of backs that are down there in Miami too. And, you know, I think about it, even comparing them to what McDaniel had in San Francisco last year, because I would argue it's better. I know now we know Elijah Mitchell was pretty good, but we think back to what that roster looked like. And, you know, obviously Mostert in both, but Mitchell, Trey Sermon, Jeff Wilson, Jamichael Hasty versus, you know, a healthier Mostert now, Chase Edmonds, Sony Michel. Like they're Salvin Ahmed. I mean, there's some Miles Gaskin.
I was going to say, thank you for not mentioning Miles Gaskin. I don't think he makes the team.
I don't think we're going to have to mention Miles Gaskin past cut day, but you know, he's still on the roster as of right now, but it's an interesting stable of backs there that is going to, again, be an exciting thing for them. But before we get into, I want to get into Tua a little bit, cause I know you mentioned some of the concepts with him. Let's kind of put a bow on this wide receiver talk. We talked a lot about Jalen Waddle, but What do you, how do you expect Tyreek Hill to be used in this offense? Will it be any different than the way he was used in Kansas City? And if so, how?
Well, I think one of the, you have to have two separate conversations with the last part of that question, which is pre-2021 Tyreek Hill or 2021 Tyreek Hill, right?
Yeah, because, very fair. And let's get into that for in a second too, because you brought this up on one of our TDN meetings, and it was a, there was a stark difference in the way he was used last year compared to, I think, the Tyreek Hill that we think of when somebody brings up his name.
Sure, because you have 6 years of highlights and explosive plays vertically down the field and extended plays where Pat is making a bunch of stuff happen and pulling rabbits out of his hat and allowing these long, long developing extended plays where you just, you can't cover them, right? But Tyreek Hill last year, somewhere around 75% of his targets were within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And that component of what Tyreek Hill is capable of doing, I think is going to give the Dolphins a little bit more, and specifically Tua Tagovailoa, a little bit more balance in the heat map, right? Where you think about where targets are at and where targets are not. Shanahan systems are notoriously known for throws between the numbers, throws in the middle of the field. And look at the Jimmy Garoppolo target distribution, and you can see just how high of the volume the throws are in the middle of the field. Well, having two guys like Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill who can win with quick hitting timing concepts to the perimeter is going to allow you, again, it comes back to that spacing of the field issue, but then a lot of those quick hitting routes, whether you're running RPOs and it's the glance slant that's breaking into the middle of the field, or if you're going to run drive or you want to run dagger, which is a little bit of a deeper developing concept, but it's still, you know, within 20 yards, a lot of these in breaking routes that, if you are going to choose to play Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle man-to-man, good luck, right? Because you're going to have all both of these guys carrying routes across the middle of the field, and then it becomes, on Tua Tagovailoa's part, the pressure to find those routes, knowing full well that if you're drawing man coverage, you're going to be running away from leverage coming across the middle of the field. So I think where Tyreek Hill won last year has plenty of transition and translatability to what the Dolphins are going to be asking him to do. But I do think the Dolphins do want to put more vertical stretch onto the field. And you've seen the flashes of that throughout the course of camp when people have been around practice. And obviously, the one that went super viral was the 65-yard throw with a ton of air yards and to Tyreek Hill on a post pattern. And it was against cover three. The free safety drives and triggers on the crossing route from Jaylen Waddle, who was coming across the middle of the field on the deep over route that we talked about Mike Gesicki was running last year that you want Jaylen to be running this year. Holland triggers on that. It's a deep third defender who's got to then flip and carry Tyreek Hill on the post route. Again, that three-level stretch with post, crosser, something in the flat. It's going to be a core concept you're going to see a million times this year. And when the free safety triggers on the cross, boom, you go over the top. Yep. And Coach McDaniel talked about that being a three-step out of the gun with a hitch. It was perfect timing. So you're still going to have a chance to see explosive plays. It's really just going to be a matter of how much of the volume. And if you're worried about volume of longer developing routes, just remember Tyreek Hill last year, vast majority of routes, three quarters of them within 10 yards of line scrimmage.
And that's great info to have because, look, we all watch a lot of football, but you can't watch every snap of every single game ever played, despite what Mike McCarthy would tell you.
Right.
So it's one of those scenarios where I think that's a great point because I think so much of the misunderstanding of these deep threats is that everything is like Madden. It's all nine routes or deep posts where everything has got 50, 60 air yards, and that's how all these big plays develop. And hey, there are those plays.
Real quick. Last 2 years, do you know how many completed passes Jimmy Garoppolo has had in the last 2 years that were further than 34 yards of air yards, which was the pass that Trey Lance completed to Danny Gray in the preseason game? It was 34 air yards. How many passes over the last 2 years in a McDaniel / Shanahan offense did Jimmy Garoppolo have that were 34 plus yards of air yards?
I'm going to say two.
One.
Was it to Ayuk?
I don't know if anybody else would be down the field there because
Debo's not going that deep.
Right. So I think that puts it into perfect perspective.
Yeah.
And you see the success that San Francisco has had. And yes, you've got Trent Williams, who's one of the best offensive linemen in football. But like all of this him and hawing and worrying about Tua Tagovailoa and how can he throw the deep ball or not? It's like, I'd rather have him than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
He's better ball handler. He's got quicker feet. I think he's a better decision maker than Jimmy Garoppolo is. And sure, great. You can have a whole debate, as I know we're getting ready to transition to Tua Tagovailoa, about the merits of having a player where the bar is he's better than Jimmy Garoppolo with the number 5 overall pick. And if you want to get into that, like yes, there's plenty of criticism to be had there.
But at this point, Kyle,
this offense and how it's designed, there's plenty of room for success.
It's over and done with. At this point, right? I mean, the Dolphins aren't going back to draft Justin Herbert, okay? We haven't had that time machine yet, okay? Because we, Lord knows Ryan Flores, if he could have figured out how to do it, he would have done it by now. So, like, it didn't happen. So, Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer have to work with the guy they got, right? I mean, like, you can't sit here, oh, man, we wish we were. Well, it doesn't matter. He's in L.A.
And
by the way, where was his last 10-win season? But, I'm not criticizing Justin Herbert. I'm just saying it's like there are different ways you can win.
I'm just going to sit here and sip my energy drink.
I say different ways you can win. And if I don't look, we'd be wasting time to debate Herbert versus Tua again for the 8,000th time. But the reality is, I like the way you phrase that of that. Like, look at those successes that those offenses. Oh, and by the way, look at the fantasy successes of Brandon Ayuk the last couple of years and Debo Samuel the last couple of years, George Kittle. And again, not thinking tight end, thinking about pass catchers and how they are used on the field. That same thing can happen here, and that's where I want to kind of get your overarching thoughts on Tua going into the year. He's got a new coach, new offensive system, new play caller, a shiny new weapon in Tyreek Hill, and also others like Cedric Wilson Jr. I mean, there are other pieces. There are pieces in the backfield with Mostert and Chase Edmonds. So he's got a lot of different new pieces around him. How are you feeling about him in terms of how he's set up for overall success in real life and maybe even for the fantasy output of his statistics for this year and beyond?
Yeah, I think Tua Tagovailoa, he's clearly set up for the most amount of success that he's ever had at the NFL level, right? Where there was the whole dynamic with the Chan Gailey offense that was brought in for Ryan Fitzpatrick that for whatever reason, the Dolphins infused Tua into midseason and caught everybody off guard with that decision. Then there was the 3-play caller snafu from last year, right?
Yeah.
So you have somebody who's been
Pitchers
hired.
Didn't learn from that, apparently. So they're going to alternate play callers. It's like like the 2QB college system. We're going to have a 2OC system in game. Just have this one. Just switch off every drive. Really confuse the defense.
I think what we've agreed upon is one of them is actually going to call the plays, but they don't want to put a title on it because then it would impact the severance pay that they're getting from whatever.
Yeah, and something. Yeah, there's like a severance pay issue. But no, they were literally. And I know there's like a coordinator thing, but right in the preseason game, I think they had Judge call part of that game.
Well, don't forget the Arizona Cardinals also have co-offensive coordinators because Kyler Murray's calling plays intermittently for that.
He's got to put that independent study time to good use, Kyle. Like,
but
if you're not going to
for Tua, the infrastructure is here, right? And I think this is a very important part of, again, going back to some of these other Shanahan-style systems and what the trends have been. You've seen varying degrees of long-term success with the established quarterback throughout some of these additional hires that you've made, where Matt LaFleur goes to Green Bay. He has Aaron Rodgers. Great. You know, you find ways to continue to build out a well-rounded offense with Aaron Rodgers. You have Sean McVay and Jared Goff, and they go play in a Super Bowl. They kind of hit the glass ceiling, and then they make a decision to make a change and go to Matthew Stafford, win a Super Bowl with that effort. But that came after having a very clearly established infrastructure around Jared Goff and then making an evaluation of him and what he was and was not capable of doing. San Francisco 49ers, they had brought in Jimmy Garoppolo. They built up the supporting staff around him. He has obviously all these great weapons that you just got done mentioning. They continue to invest in the running game with backs out of the backfield. And then they, too, kind of completed the evaluation and said, we need to make a change because we have everything that we want around him to be able to play winning football. And then they make the huge trade, give up three ones for Trey Lance.
Yep.
This is the beginning of that period for Tua Tagovailoa, where are you going to put to rest and ease the minds of Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel by playing at a sustainable level that you feel like you can consistently win with, a la Rodgers? Or are you going to have your successes, but also have the, yeah, but that you saw the Rams and the 49ers as they evaluated and then ultimately make a decision to turn and pivot and go in a different direction? This is the beginning of that period for Tua. It's all up to him now, right?
You're isolating the variable, right? Like that's what it is. You're isolating the variable. Can you win with this player at quarterback, or are you winning in spite of this quarterback, or are you losing because of? Like, once you're looking for that definite answer. And obviously it's a little bit different with Aaron Rodgers because he's Aaron Rodgers, but you saw, like you said, both play out very, you know, very linearly in San Francisco and in Los Angeles with both of those quarterbacks of, okay, how far can that quarterback take us? Let's make sure there's no excuse, nothing that we can go and say, oh, we didn't put this guy in the best position possible. You can argue from even taking the on-field stuff, just off the field spot, they probably put Tua in the worst position possible, plus all the other stuff on the field. This is the beginning of like, hey, sink or swim, we believe in you enough to put this talent around you. There's no more excuses left.
I agree completely.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fascinating to watch this year. While we wrap this up here, for those of you that are Devy players or Dynasty players, be remiss if I didn't ask Kyle. He's got a chance to see a few young Dolphins out there. Is there anybody, you know, I wrote down in our little show notes here, Eric Isukanma. Is there somebody around there that's one of these young guys that's deep on the depth chart now, but is somebody that if you're playing in a long-term league that you need to kind of keep an eye on, maybe a taxi squad guy for you?
Eric. Isukanma's the guy.
What do you like about him?
So he is the primary questions that we had coming out with Eric was, well, he plays at Texas Tech, his spread offense. You see a lot of drop A coverage in the Big 12. So you don't really know how he's going to handle consistent press coverage and the contact window and getting into his routes and staying on schedule early on. It's not a problem. It's not a problem. And the Dolphins have some really, really good man coverage players that he continues daily at practice to make at least one splash play down the field. And there's this natural ball skills and high point ability paired with the physicality that he brings in short windows. And the Kyle Shanahan offense has a ton of wide receivers who are big bodied guys who they play in a tight or a nasty split, which is real close to the line of scrimmage. And they have them step down and they block. And then you can have complementary production in the passing game that comes from their presence and ability to play physical in the box and seal down on linebackers or climb up and beat up safeties. Isukanma has the goods to be that kind of player long-term for the Dolphins. Now, the question is how quickly can he sort through and sift through the noise of beyond just Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, you do have Mike Gesicki on the franchise tag. You have Cedric Wilson
who was paid
in. Yeah. Yep. And he was paid $7 million per season. So it's a reasonable investment.
It is not nothing.
Then you have Trent Sherfield, who's a transplant from San Francisco, has played with the 49ers the last couple of years and is going to be a special teams demon that absolutely makes the roster. It's bad news for guys like Preston Williams, who's already kind of voiced his frustration with lack of opportunity in camp, and also Lynn Bowden Jr., who's a third-year player who was a third-round pick once upon a time that the Dolphins engaged in a pick swap with to bring in 2020. They're not getting looks. And Isukanma right now is closer, in my mind, to being wide receiver 3 than he is to being wide receiver 5. He's consistently post patterns down the field, high point catches that look like Devontae Parker with the jump ball opportunities. Mm-hmm. Now, he still, I think, is going to have to develop his route so that he can get a little bit more consistent with the separation. But that is a dynamic of this offense that prompts a lot, especially if you have success running the football and teams start running more zone coverage because they want eyes in the backfield to trigger on the run.
Yeah.
You start playing more zone coverage, Isukanma's ball skills can really shine because he's not going to have a defender who's playing man on him playing in his head.
It's exciting. It's exciting stuff. The Dolphins are really going to be a fun team to watch just in general for the next little bit here. So many storylines. I'm really excited to see how all this talent plays together. You know, I'm a big Raheem Mostert guy as well. Yeah. I love the talent. I hope he can stay on the field long enough to have a major impact, but he's a guy that dude's electric when he touches the ball and it's going to be in the same offense that he's found that success in all along. So I'm really excited to see this, but you know, Kyle, we've come to the end of the show now. Let's get all your plugs in, because if you're listening to the show at episode one, you probably already know who Kyle is. You probably already know what Draft Dudes is, but just in case they don't, please plug away.
So I am the co-host of the Draft Dudes podcast with Joe Marino. Chris Schubert is on there as our producer. We have a great time. It's 5 days a week. So Monday through Friday, we talk anything and everything. I am effectively the VP of football ops at thedraftnetwork.com. Do writing there pretty consistently. I'm a big part of the scouting process. We have a phenomenal team of scouts there that are really committed to putting together this really comprehensive scouting database with written profiles and film assessments. And we're getting ready to drop TDM 100 at the end of the month, which is very exciting, which is our top 100 prospects entering this year for college football. There's a lot that we are doing here at TDN. And I always enjoyed like the happy hours on the premium Discord and the Football Fridays as well, which is something that we are continuing to build out what that Discord community looks like, which is just a fraction of what your user experience as a TDM premium member is like. So if you are a TDM premium member, make sure you log on to the website, and right there in your user profile is the link to the Discord community, which you can come in Thursday, 7 p.m. We do happy hour Fridays. You guys can sit in on our meetings. We're going to be adding some film study time together to watch players together and talk about the game. There's a lot of great stuff that's coming down the pipe. So make sure you stay plugged in, and you can hit subscribe on this podcast, Draft Good Players Podcast. Hit subscribe on Draft Dudes. Hit subscribe on Talent Factor with Keith Sanchez, Dane Parson. And, get ready for football season, man. It's finally back, which feels really, really good, because I feel like this offseason was the longest one that I've had in a really long
time. It did. It felt like it was exciting, but it was a long offseason. I'm ready to see everybody on the actual football field again. And Deco Kyle Sendeman, if you're not already a TDN premium member, you really want to log on and join. If you buy the yearly thing, it's $250 a month. Really, really cheap. And like Kyle said, we've got even more fun stuff. You want to watch film? You want to know about some of these guys? I mean, we did a Will Levis film breakdown. If you're playing in Dynasty and you're looking at your roster and you're looking at QBs in a super flex league that you might want to add, you need to know who these guys are in advance and what their skill sets are, so you're way ahead of your league mates when it comes to rookie draft time. But stay tuned to this podcast every Monday, every Wednesday. Ray and Keith will be back on Wednesday for the third episode of the Draft Good Players Podcast. I'm Jamie Eisner. Thanks for joining us.